For a while now, they've had a pilot program where they teach mindfulness to kids in New York City schools. And after a while, they decided to do a survey of what the results were. They found that a lot of kids were having a negative reaction, that the mindfulness they were taught got them more in touch with their feelings, what was going on in their minds, but it didn't give them any tools to deal with those things. They felt unprotected. Now, some people say that was the problem with mindfulness, but actually it's a problem with the type of mindfulness they were taught, the type that says you simply are alert or aware of what's happening without doing anything about it. Sometimes it's added that you will naturally see that things are in constant, stressful, not self, and you let go. But it just wasn't cutting it. Now you can see why people believe that mindfulness is just that, being aware of what's happening as it's happening. Because you look at the big suttas on the topic, the Satipatthana Sutta and the Majjhima Nikaya, and the Mahasatipatthana, the great Satipatthana Sutta, and the Dika Nikaya. They're both very long. In fact, in the Thai canon, they're identical. And it's easy to come away with the impression, well, this must be a complete description of mindfulness practice. But you have to look more carefully at the suttas. They start with the formula for mindfulness. You keep the body in and of itself in mind, or keep track of the body in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. You keep feelings in and of themselves in mind, or you keep track of feelings in and of themselves. You keep track of mind states in and of themselves. You keep track of mental qualities in and of themselves, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. The Buddha lays out the formula. But then he answers questions only about one little part of that formula, one sliver of the formula. What does it mean to keep track of something? He doesn't explain ardent, alert, mindful. He doesn't explain how to put aside greed and distress with reference to the world. What this means is you have to look elsewhere in the canon for what those terms mean. And there we find lots of different suttas. Alert means knowing what you're doing while you're doing it, either in terms of what your body is doing, or in terms of what your mind is doing, creating feelings, perceptions. And it's important to note that fact. You are doing your feelings. As Buddha points out, there are potentials coming from the past, but you turn them into the actual experience of feelings by what you're doing right now. How you fabricate them in terms of the way you breathe, how you talk to yourself, what perceptions you have around them. Hold on to that point, because it helps you make sense of all the rest of the practice. You're not just aware of feelings as they come and go on their own. You play a role in fabricating them, and you want to be alert to how you're doing that. Because you don't just stop there, you want to do it well. This is what the ardency means. It's another word for right effort. If that's something unskillful comes up, you do your best to put it away. You try to prevent it from coming up again. As for skillful qualities, if they're not there yet, you try to give rise to them. This is where discernment comes in, as you understand what is skillful, what is unskillful. And you gain experience in directing the mind where it should go. And one of the things you keep it away from, of course, is thoughts of greed and distress with reference to the world. These are the thoughts that the kids in New York were having trouble with. They hadn't been given the proper tools for dealing with that, but the Buddha gives lots and lots of instructions throughout the canon on how you deal with feelings like this, thoughts like this. So there's nothing wrong with mindfulness practice as a whole. The problem is when you do only a sliver of it and you suppress the rest of it, then there's going to be trouble. To understand mindfulness as a whole, you have to see it in its larger context. In the Noble Eightfold Path, it comes between right effort on the one side and right concentration on the other, based on right effort, which is the same as ardency. You develop mindfulness so as to lead into concentration, where you develop states of well-being, the pleasure and rapture, or the pleasure and refreshment, the first jhana, equanimity of the fourth jhana. That's where you're headed. This point is reinforced by a common list in the canon of how the stages of the practice go. You start out with restraint of the senses. You build on that, develop right mindfulness, and from right mindfulness you go to the seven factors for awakening. Now the seven factors start with mindfulness, but they show how, beginning with mindfulness, you analyze things in terms of skillful and unskillful. You make an effort to abandon what is unskillful and develop what is skillful, and that will lead the mind into concentration. So seeing the larger context gives you a sense of where the mindfulness should be going. It doesn't just stay there watching things coming and going. You use it as part of a training that gets you into right concentration. Seeing this context, you pay more attention to one of the lists inside the description of right mindfulness, where the Buddha talks into different kinds of feelings. When you read the list of feelings, it seems as if you're just aware of feelings that are there and feelings that are not there. Same with mind states. You're aware of mind states as they come and they go. Remember, that's just keeping track of these things, though. But even as you're just keeping track of them, the Buddha talks about not only feelings, pleasurable, painful, neither pleasurable nor painful, but also feelings of the flesh, feelings not of the flesh. Feelings of the flesh are your ordinary sensations of pleasure and pain of the senses. Feelings not of the flesh are things that you manufacture. They don't happen unless you do them. As I said, you do your feelings anyhow. But ordinary pleasures of the senses, you've gotten so good at that that you do these things without really being conscious of them. But feelings not of the flesh, those are things you have to be conscious of how you're doing them. Pains not of the flesh are when you think about how you want to gain awakening. Other people have gained awakening. You're not there yet. That pain, the Buddha said, is something that should be developed as motivation for practicing. There is, of course, the pain that you're not there yet, but there's also the possibility, seeing that other people can do this, you think, they're human beings, I'm a human being, they can do it, why can't I? That's a pain with some hope. As for pleasures, not of the flesh, and neutral feelings, not of the flesh, those are the feelings that come with the practice of jhana. So again, we're heading into concentration, trying to be mindful in a way, alert in a way, ardent in a way. It gets the mind to settle down with that sense of well-being. Even the equanimity has a sense of well-being because it comes after the pleasure. It's not the hungry equanimity of just telling yourself, okay, I can be okay with whatever comes up. It's equanimity that's been well-fed. That's at peace. What John Fuang would call large-hearted equanimity, as opposed to the small-hearted equanimity, which just grits your teeth and say, okay, I'll bear with it. You're becoming equanimous because the mind's need for pleasure has been well fed. And so you can view things as they come into the mind with a lot more stability. You feel less threatened by them. And you're more willing to deal with them skillfully, more capable of dealing with them skillfully. Willing in the sense of saying, yes, I have the energy to deal with these things. To remember what lessons I've learned from other people, to listen to those lessons. And if those lessons don't work for me, I'm willing to put in the energy to figure out what will work. That's all part of ardency. Remember that the Buddha said that concentration is like food for the practice. As we go through the day, go through life, we're going to need this food, need this support. Because negative things will come up, as happens with the kids in New York. They're not alone in that. Everybody's going to have negative things coming up in the meditation. And it's all a lot easier if you can come at these things with a sense of well-being, a sense of stability, not feeling threatened by them. Think of the Buddha's image of the six animals. You go through life, and you're going to be dealing with sight, sound, smells, tastes, tactile sensations, ideas. Those ideas can be pretty strong. Especially when they're negative. He compares them to six kind of animals. A snake, a crocodile, a bird, a dog, a hyena, a monkey. It's as if you have leashes on each of these six animals, but you don't tie them to a stake. You just tie them, the ends of the leashes together. The animals will pull and pull, and whichever one is strongest will pull the rest of them where it wants to go. The monkey will want to go up to a tree. The bird will want to fly into the air. The hyena apparently would want to go to a charnel ground, feed on a few corpses. The snake will want to go down in a hole. The crocodile will want to go down to the river. Now, of the six animals, the crocodile is obviously the strongest. And even though the sutta doesn't say this, I can imagine that the crocodile is basically the mind. It pulls everything else along with it. And they all drown in the river. That's when you don't have a solid basis. If you give the mind a solid basis, and here the Buddha says mindfulness of the body, then you tie the leashes to this post, which is mindfulness of the body. Then pull as they might, they can't pull away. They end up just lying down right next to the post right there. Now, mindfulness of the body is not just being aware of the body. When this Buddha describes it, you get the mind into concentration through being mindful of the body in various ways. But the concentration is the important part. In fact, some of his longest descriptions of the practice of jhana come in his sutta on mindfulness of the body. And that pleasure, that well-fed pleasure, that well-fed equanimity, that's what keeps your various thoughts and ideas and desires for the senses, good or bad, from pulling them away. So think of this. We're practicing mindfulness for the sake of concentration, concentration for the sake of feeding the mind well. And when the mind is well fed, then it can deal with whatever comes up. People sometimes ask, when I was in Thailand, how did I dealt with difficult emotions coming up? And one of the first things I say is I learned how to focus on the breath, not just being aware of the breath willy-nilly, but working with the breath to make it comfortable and developing a sense of well-being inside. Once you have that, then the mind is in much better shape for actually wanting to deal with unskillful emotions and having the space to come up with solutions. Because what works for one person may not work for another, in the sense of what particular ways of thinking will make a difference. But having this foundation, mindfulness as a whole, not just a sliver of mindfulness, mindfulness leading to right concentration, informed by right view, remembering that you're watching feelings, not just willy-nilly, you're actually participating in their fabrication. Then you can look into that process of fabrication. You'll be right on target. The problem is right there. As the Buddha said, we suffer because we fabricate things in ignorance. But when we can bring knowledge to the process of fabrication, that becomes part of the path. And it's sustained by developing a sense of well-being that you can then learn how to carry through the day. As you're doing walking meditation, remember, you're trying to walk in a way that feels good inside, feels nourished inside. You don't just pace back and forth, back and forth. You feel your torso with good breath energy. Let it flow down the arms, down the legs. And try to do that as you walk, so that you can actually have this post of mindfulness, well-fed mindfulness, solidly planted inside.